Hello, and welcome to another month of Apocalypse Video's look at the wondrous world of nature. For the month of March, we leave behind the ocean waters and take to the skies to observe the many species that inhabit the world above our heads. This is March of the Penguins and other bird-related vims. All month long, we'll be discussing everything from penguins to extravagant plumage in Miami.
Look at me. I'm this short, fat, insecure, middle-aged thing.
I made you short?
Bizarre worlds filled with talking herons.
Hold on! Not my number 7 flight feather! Darn it! That's cheating, you know! Stop laughing!
To the madcap zaniness of ducks.
You know you haven't stopped talking since I came here? You must have been vaccinated with a phonograph needle.
No feather will be left unturned. On this final installment, we discuss the Marx Bird. A pioneer in the world of comedy, the Marx Bird uses fast speech and wordplay to confuse its prey while it moves in for the punchline. Its techniques are so effective that they are still being used by its comedy progenitors nearly 100 years later. And there is no finer example of the Marx Bird in its prime than duck soup.
I'll see you at the theater tonight. I'll hold your seat till you get there. After you get there, you're on your own.
Hello? Hello, yes? No, he's not in yet. All right, well, goodbye. That was for you again.
I wonder whatever became of me. I should have been back here a long time ago.
They got guns, we got guns, all got children got guns.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Apocalypse Video March of the Penguins and other bird-related films. We are proudly sponsored by NRA, and we are also members. I'm your host, Dave, and I'm joined again by Ryan.
Sorry, Dave, I just was thinking of the years I've wasted collecting stamps.
I'm also joined by Michael.
I'd like to discuss the tariffs. Dave, I just got to say real quick off the top of the bat. When this movie said produced by the NRA.
Well, no, it said NRA member.
You know it's not the National Rifle Association, right?
What was it?
What is it?
It's one of the FDR, like, we're going to rebuild after the Depression program. It's like the new... I don't remember what it stands for, but it is not the National Rifle Association. It's like, it's one of those, like, we're going to... Imagine, if you will, we're going to spend government money to promote the arts kind of program.
Oh, okay.
Like every other country?
Yeah, thing. yeah, like a civilized society would.
It's a good laugh, though, now in today's times.
It made me laugh. Well, one thing, that was kind of a shock, and thank you for the historical context for that. I just assumed, because this is the 30s, I could be like, yeah, I can imagine the NRA, like, yeah, proud member of the NRA, you know, drink your Ovaltine and smoke those cigarettes. But no, I one thing that caught me off guard, even before the NRA thing, we were watching like a streamed version of this, And we get some stolen valor here by Universal. We get the Universal logo.
Oh, yeah.
And at least, and I was just, and then Paramount. Yeah. And I'm just like, I don't know if we've really discussed this on the show before, like, but when you watch old movies, like, you know, rights issues is a very common thing with movies. Like, it'll be made by one studio, and then decades later, another studio will re-release it on disc or something and put their and slap their logo on the beginning. And I just think that's like stolen valor.
Is it you're talking about, like, it's weird to see like the brand new Universal logo in front of this.
Yeah.
From like made in
from
like
a Paramount movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this, when you're saying brand new, this is like the CG, like Earth thing.
Yeah. From like maybe like 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
And anyway. It's just like, that always irritates me that they insert that into the movie. It's just annoying. It ruins the vibe for me a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it plays in the middle of the movie.
But it kicks off the movie, though. It's not like I'm fine with it when you put the disc in and you get that logo up front. Like,
did it? Because we got the old timey, like the NRA,
Paramount.
Not the gun one,
the
but you know, the other NRA did their thing. Did the Universal logo come after that?
No, then
it was logo. First.
Okay. You know, as long as they get the new logos out of the way, I don't care. At first, I don't care. I don't want to see like the old timey RKO logo, like beep, 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 and then cut to like 20th century, not Fox, just 20, you know, some weird thing after that. Don't do that. But I this is fine.
Just a note. That shit irritates me. I don't like it when they insert it into the movie. It's different when you put a disc in and it's the first thing that happens, like when the disc loads up. But when I hit play movie, I don't want to see some new dumbass logo in there.
Listeners, when we were watching the film, obviously you didn't see this, but Dave was harumphing. He was folding his arms. There was a harumph. There was an audible harumph.
But then it was replaced when we see literal duck soup. We see ducks in like a boiling pot, like dinking around in there, and that's as much as we get of duck soup in this movie.
That's the birds of the month, right there.
Yeah,
I did want to like. I was waiting this for the end, really, but like, what?
Why?
I mean, maybe we can save this. Maybe we can pin this question and answer it by the end of the episode. But like,
I knew we should have watched Happy Feet. This was a mistake.
What did this have to do with duck soup at all? Why is it called duck soup?
Like, should we should probably think about what it is before we look it up, right?
Like, okay, so Ryan's the guy in the chair. He can look it up. I have no idea. So obviously this is like satirizing like dictators of the time, right?
It definitely is. Yeah, I mean it's made in the 30s. What's one of the cool things about this is it's like made in the early 30s satirizing dictators when they were like a newish thing. Like this is like the rise of fascism, right? Like 33 is like World War II has not happened.
Okay. Yeah, I think I don't think we'll ever guess. I don't think
this is what I'm thinking of when I think of duck soup in this movie.
Oh yeah.
There's a thing that's like the oldest joke that's in recorded history, and it's like written on like a Sumerian or one of those like cuneiform tablets, you know? And the joke is something like a guy walks into a bar, orders a drink, and they give him a jackal. I'm like paraphrasing something like that. And like the note about it is like the humor of this joke is likely lost to time. Like, and that is what I'm thinking is the name of duck soup. Is it some joke that maybe made something that doesn't make any sense anymore?
Well, I think it does. I think it, now looking at it, but I don't think we can gather it from this movie. At all.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at the literal definition of duck soup.
It's an old idiom, it looks like, early 1900s, for an easy task. And it was, or like a piece of cake, a pushover. And so it's like the idea, it's a favorable situation, like floating, effortlessly floating through time, like you're a duck in a soup.
So this, is it maybe like the Groucho character here is like him being the dictator is like, it's like the piece of cake. It's like duck
I
soup.
I think so. Like maybe like that's the idea. Like these guys are,
he's just kind of dicking around like.
Yeah, like just nothing, flowing through life, you know, without care kind of thing, you know. And I think that's the idea of it. And it's an old, it was kind of popularized by this movie for sure, but it seems like it was a phrase earlier than that. It says earliest use was 1902 in a newspaper.
Mm.
So about like 30 years prior.
Featured a man juggling items with the caption, duck soup.
Was the does it have the last recorded use on there, like an old guy in a VFW in the 70s?
So you're right. I think you're right, Mike, but it's like, I don't, it's, yeah, I never thought about it, really. I just figured, because, I mean, how I think I gather, because it's the second time I've watched this, but the first time I thought the same thing, like, what the hell is this? But I just figured, because it's just like a bunch of sketches kind of, like, kind of put together, like, that's duck soup. I don't know. That was my idea. Like, this is just,
you
like,
know, I've never had duck soup. Anyone have duck soup?
Never had duck soup, and this, I've never seen a Marx Brothers movie until now. And I think looking online, this seems to be like universally regarded as like their most famous one.
It's like this and Night at the Opera or something like that.
Yeah,
this is the only one I've seen, and it's the only one I've heard of. Like, I mean, yeah. I know of the Marx Brothers. I know that I feel like my context with the Marx Brothers is I always hear people like Mel Brooks in that era. Like Woody Allen, the Carl Reiner, that generation of comedians, I've always heard them talk about.
Marx Brothers,
yeah, and that's, but that's my only.
What about Groucho glasses? You know.
Yeah,
oh,
I knew the Groucho Marx look. I didn't know the other. I knew the sort of the names like Hippo Marx.
I'll tell you, this was a revelation for me. Right, I mean, it's right away. They don't really try to hide it, but I didn't realize the Groucho eyebrows were fake. I thought that he had big bushy
and that
eyebrows.
Mustache too. That was a marker. That was like a magic marker on his upper lip.
Yeah, yeah. The whole look is a sham. He probably looks like one of the other Grouch brother or Marx Brothers.
Well, they all there's a whole scene where they all three look exactly the same.
You know? And it was freaky. Yeah. I couldn't tell. Like when they applied the makeup and stuff, I'm like, I don't know which one is which. They all look the same to me.
This is stealing. I mean, so we got Groucho, Harpo, and Chico, and then. This is stealing from another podcast, but what's Zeppo's deal? Like, what's the deal with Zeppo?
Well, I had trouble finding the fourth Marx brother.
Which one is Zeppo?
He's just like the guy. He's just like a guy. Like he's like his secretary at some point. He doesn't do anything funny.
Okay, that's what I thought. Maybe it was because at one point he dances at the end. I'm like, oh yeah,
he's at the end of the movie when they're showing.
I have a question.
Yeah,
are these really brothers?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Why did Zeppo, if I'm thinking of looking at, I'm looking at who
Zeppo's
Zeppo played.
Zeppo's like the hot one.
He looks way different than the rest of them.
Zeppo's like the...
Well, the other ones are like not normal, a typical adult height. I feel like Zeppo's like a normal height man. Or at least it looked like it in the movie.
Like apparently, there's a fifth Marx brother, but...
Oh, God. I don't Carl? Gummo? Is it
Gummo
Karl Marx?
I don't know. Gummo, too. I don't know.
But. Four of the brothers went into comedy, and the fifth founded communism.
But I don't know. Like, yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You're on a roll.
I mean, I think, like,
you're on a roll.
Watching this, it really, I think I think I said this last episode where I'm like, or maybe it was after we were recording, where I was kind of like, it took me a minute to get, like, on, like, into this movie, I feel like. Like, maybe, like, the first 15 minutes, I was like, fuck is this? And then all of a sudden it started to like revel, like, oh, Animaniacs, Looney Tunes, like everything I like we watched young is from this stuff, you know, just like in the humor wise and everything. Muppets,
especially like the wordplay,
very Muppets, like the wordplay. Like,
I think that this is like one of my notes is I feel like this is a bridge between, like, on one hand, this feels like you're just watching like a live act, like a vaudeville act, and it's kind of like a bridge between
like
that. And
TV,
like Mel Brooks style comedy, or like Muppets, or you know, Looney Tunes, that kind of thing. Like, where you just it's the bit is something serious is happening, there's like a plot, but then you just have these like cartoon characters who are like taking the piss out of everything.
Oh, I want to present you Ambassador Trentino of Salvania. Having him with us today is indeed a great pleasure.
Thank you, but I can't stay very long.
That's even a greater pleasure. Now, how about lending this country $20 million, you old skinflint?
$20 million is a lot of money. I shall have to take that up with my Minister of Finance.
Well, in the meantime, could you let me have $12 until payday?
$12?
Don't be scared. You'll get it back. I'll give you my personal note for 90 days. If it isn't paid by then, you can keep the note.
Your Excellency, haven't we seen each other somewhere before?
I don't think so. I'm not sure I'm seeing you now. It must be something I ate.
Look here, sir. Are you trying to...
Don't look now. But there's one man too many in this room, and I think it's you.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And then they're also, like, wearing the goofiest shit, like, the whole time. Like, they don't... fit at all.
They don't change into costumes. Like, that was one thing I thought was interesting. Like, and I was thinking of Charlie Chaplin. Like, when you watch those old tramp movies, he's always he kind of alternates. Like, he's got his tramp outfit, then something will happen, he'll wear a new outfit for whatever role he has then. But in this, they're just in their Marx Brothers outfits the whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah, in the way that makes you think of it like a vaudeville routine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's funny too, cuz like when I watched this, I thought that they were like, it was weird they had like character names, like Groucho is Rufus, T Firefly. But I'm kind of like, I thought they were just
Zendaya,
like,
is Michi or whatever.
Yeah, I thought like, yeah, like Groucho is in the movie, which he is. It's just like it was a surprise to me. Like he's a leader of a country. What?
Like, yeah, it was like, who okay, who wants to take the reins of the plot for this? Because I was just like, what? This
movie. Groucho is the dictator of Fredonia, like newly elected dictator of the country Fredonia.
There's like a lady that elected him in the beginning.
And there's like some sort of like attempt to remove him and some like uprising or something, some rebellion or something.
From another country or something, right?
It's like a whole scam. Like, we're going to get him to be the leader so we can like go to war with them kind of thing or something. Like, it doesn't, it's, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the plot is almost inconsequential.
But
the plot doesn't matter. It's just like scenes of the Grouchos interacting in various like situations. Yeah, the Grouchos, the Marx Brothers. It's very much like set piece, set piece, set piece. Like, yeah. It really feels like a live vaudeville act, but
there's like a kind of like a thing kind of connecting it a little bit. Like,
this is early on in sound too. Like, I want to stress like how old this movie is. This isn't just like, oh, it's an older movie. It's 1933. This is almost like from 2026, it would almost be 100 years old. Like, it is crazy how old this movie is. Like, it's early
crazy
sound.
That we're getting to the point that movies with sound are 100 years old, which is kind of crazy. Yeah.
This movie is like, they're like, it's early sound in the way it's like, okay, we're just going to like film a scene of people talking. Like, there's not a lot of, it is almost like stage-like production.
Yeah, like there's not like crazy, there's not even like sound effects really or music.
I think not a lot of music aside from the musical, like the musical moments.
Right.
Like, aside from that, like there's no,
which is
like
a big early
score.
Sound thing. And, you know, yeah. Like, oh, we could do
well,
music
to answer
now.
Your question, Ryan, I think if I'm not mistaken, I think prior to this, the earliest movie we would have watched would have been the original Cat People, I think. And I think that was the 40s.
Wow. That's okay. So this is the earliest.
This has got to be the oldest one we've seen, unless we've seen a silent film.
Did we never do any Chaplin at all?
We did do Train Arriving at Station, but it was so unpopular we basically just removed it from the library.
Okay.
Well, that was our longest episode, right? It was like four
hours. Yeah, like 5 hours long.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot to pick up. Oh,
yeah, because this is also the year before The Code came into effect too.
Does say this is a pre-code movie. Yeah, yeah. And I did,
which are fun to watch. I've been having a lot of when I watch
it. And it definitely is pre-code. Like,
this is full. Like, there's women walking around with just like their boobs out in these movies, and you're just
that
like,
surprised me.
And it's amazing. I mean, you're kind of like, oh my god, we used to be a country. It's crazy.
Half of Groucho's lines are just like, you know, nice cans.
Like,
bruh.
There's a whole joke where like it's showing. It's a Harpo and like getting in a bed, like it's like he's like woo woo and like goes into like a building with a horse to go see a lady, and then it pans across their shoes next to the bed, and then the horseshoes are next to the bed too.
We get a sex joke. I couldn't
about
believe
like
it. It was
sex with the
it was
horse.
Honestly, you just hit on the funniest moment of the movie for me. This I actually laughed at this moment because cards on the table. I can appreciate that a lot of humor nowadays derives from this. I think Ryan, you and I were talking before the record. You could definitely tell, like, okay, this is Bugs Bunny. Bunny is Groucho Marx, basically.
Yeah.
Like, I can see the roots of a lot of different comedy, a lot of wordplay, but this, I'm sorry.
It wasn't working for you.
With the exception of this sex joke, which was genuinely funny, it's panning across, you see their clothes, their shoes on the floor, and then you see the horseshoes and the horses in bed with them. Like, that was genuinely funny. But aside from that, I'm sorry. Like, oftentimes the humor fell flat. I think part of it, and we kind of nailed on this a little bit ago, there's no music really in this movie. So you're seeing these scenes play out almost just dead silence. There's no music. There's no laugh
track.
Ordinarily, I wouldn't go for, but it's almost like I'm watching this.
You want
like,
a laugh track?
No, ordinarily I wouldn't, but I'm watching it thinking like there's something missing from this.
Do you think this would have worked for you in the if this was the vaudeville act, if you were just watching this live?
Well, what it needs is people laughing. You know what I mean? Like you need that energy.
Well, you didn't see it in a movie theater, Dave?
I did not. Ryan was lucky enough. Ryan, you said you first saw this movie.
I mean, in the movie's defense, I don't think they imagined a world in which you would not be seeing this in a movie theater with other people who would be laughing.
That's the crazy thing. They didn't imagine
me. Well, and that's maybe why it wasn't doing it for me.
I put this on Vimeo. Is that where I watched this movie? Yeah. So.
Well, it's just that's why it didn't do it for me. Just like hearing it in a vacuum and just like... Yeah.
No, I feel you, and that's why
it's tough to watch any comedy just alone.
It is.
Yeah.
It's especially something like this that you're like out of time
like,
watching.
You could definitely, I personally have enjoyed plenty of comedies watching alone, but I would never, none of my like laugh riot moments are just myself. Like,
well, and that, yeah, because you said we're basically just watching vaudeville acts. You need that energy of a crowd to kind of get you going.
I think you do.
It does, but
there's also just like the past is a foreign country, you know.
Yeah,
it's tough to like get a lot of the, you know, a lot of the jokes went over my head. Like they were probably like referencing things that I'm just like not quite.
It's all just wordplay. It's very much like the Statler and Waldorf kind of jokes. It's like that kind of thing. And
mile a minute, like they come out so fast brain's like not processing it, which is part of the appeal, I imagine.
Like most of the stuff that I saw, this like I thought this some of this stuff I was kind of just like paying attention to what he's saying, and it's just like. It's funny. It's just, it's one of those things. It's so fast and it's so dry that you're like, is that a joke
or not?
Very
dry, yeah.
You're like, and so there, I was catching stuff.
And it would sometimes make the plot confusing because like all the straight characters are kind of like, you know, like, oh, they're at the gates of Fredonia.
I can't mind day off.
And then they, like, he'll say something like in a witty response and I'm like, what does that mean though? Like what's happening? I don't understand. Like speaking English, Groucho, like what? But yeah. I mean, but that's the joke, I guess, is like that's part of the,
it's
quote,
just
unquote,
them
appeal.
Responding to these like oldies, nutty
I'll say like for me the movie worked when it was like at its, when it was getting the most unhinged. Like the early on, a joke that landed for me well is like they're doing the whole announcing the arrival or coronation or whatever it is of the dictator of Groucho, and like that whole sequence I really like because it's like and you know, it's good like spoof of fascism, spoof of dictators, where it's like all the pomp and circumstance, you know, like, the,
like
it's just
horns and stuff.
Yeah, so it's like the they like come out and like do like what do they? They first like blow a bunch of horns, and there's a line of people, you know, and you think that's it, like, burr, 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 and then you imagine that he's gonna come walking down, but instead of that, it's a bunch of like scantily clad girls and with like sparklers come out, and then it's like a whole other thing, and then you're like, all right, well, he's gonna come out, and then like more trumpets come out and like keeps piling on, and then at the end of all of it, he's not there because he's overslept.
And yeah, but then like, he comes up from the other side through like a fire hole.
Yeah,
he
just like
he
ruins it. He ruins the whole thing. Like he shows up on the front instead of the back.
He goes up to the guy. He's like, "What are we waiting for?" And then he goes like the leader of Fredonia, whatever. He's like, "Oh," and then he like puts his cigar out like it's one of the swords. Yeah. And that's funny, David. I don't know. That's funny. I don't know. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, this sequence is pretty funny.
This was okay. I
love that. And then without getting into much detail. Towards the end, when they're like going to war, and there's like a musical number about like going to war, I feel like that was like so unhinged. That whole sequence,
that whole last like 5 minutes is insane.
I enjoyed that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, because again, like I think it's just a lot of these things that play out in dead silence. Just it killed it for me.
I think you can draw a lot again. Like I just watched the recent Naked Gun movie. You can draw a line from this straight to that. You know.
Yeah, it's like the dryness of. Neeson and stuff like that, and I would say the first bit I wrote this down because I was just like, this is the one I remember in theaters too, where the movie was kind of finally like clicking for me, because you're kind of trying to figure, like, everyone that was seeing this in 1933 like knows these characters, like they're like they're like laughing.
It's like
with
their
them.
Fourth or fifth movie, I think, at this
point. And they've been in like probably were doing this on stage, and so they were famous, these guys, and so they were kind of like, they're laughing probably just as they know like the situation these guys get in.
They're like laughing before the joke comes.
Yeah, and there's a bit where it's Chico and Harpo are the other like two brothers basically.
Penn and Teller basically.
Yeah, and they're kind of working for the other side. They're like spies or something. It doesn't really make any sense. But there's a moment where he's like showing his tattoos to Groucho, and he has.
I noted the tattoos. Like I was like, whoa,
That's funny. Like it kind of like he kind of has a tattoo for everything.
Where do you live? Oh, I live right here. He shows his chest, and there's like a house and like a door, and then there's like a dog that comes out of the door.
Yeah, and he's just like, you have
those
my mom.
Those unhinged moments were funny. I agree with you on that.
Like my mom's number or something like that. And he has the number, just all these things.
Pre-Haze Code, I imagine. I don't think you're showing tattoos like that on the Haze Code.
I know. And so that was one of the first things where I think I remember in the theater too, realizing like, oh, I caught up to it, if that makes sense. You know, like with what was going on a little bit and like, who are these guys? Because I didn't. It's so funny that I did have so much exposure from these things from they were in Looney Tunes, you know, like they would reference these guys and stuff and you would see certain vibes and stuff like, I don't know, is like a Chico kind of like a Daffy Duck kind of guy, kind of a little bit. I don't know. I was just trying to like.
I think Groucho's caring all of them. I don't know what the other ones are really bringing to the table, to be
Harpo,
honest.
Harpo's whole thing.
Harpo's the silent honks.
Was the silent one, like the he's like the sound effects guy and the guy that like I was curious if this was unique to this movie or if this was just part of his bit or his shtick. He's like constantly cutting things.
That was one of those things I didn't get at first, but then
he's like, huh?
But then it got funny again later, like when the guy comes in with like his hat like cut in half kind of thing. It was like, what the fuck is this? So he keeps cutting stuff in half, and then eventually it caught up to me again, and it became funny. It's like stupid.
Well, it was just, I guess, like like you mentioned, like this is probably some shtick that they've been doing forever that people know and love. Oh, he's doing the scissor thing. This is great. It didn't fit for me with this movie because it just seems just so random and. I'm like, what is this? Why is he doing this? I don't know. I will say this movie wasn't unbearable.
Have we said how long this movie is?
It's like an hour and 7 minutes.
This is one of the shortest movies we've ever seen.
It might be. Well, putting aside like cartoons and TV shows, yeah, this is probably the shortest movie we've watched.
It's kind of crazy because I was thinking of it too. Like, this would have been playing. Like in the theater all day with like reels and cartoons and stuff surrounding it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's built for like someone to walk in at any minute, basically, of the movie.
I mean, I keep coming back to like when this was made and like I think it's like, you know, this isn't Chaplin doing The Great Dictator in the 40s. Like this is like I was double checking. Like this is the year that Hitler came to power was the when that they made this movie. So they were like. You know, obviously they're satirizing like other dictators besides Hitler, just Hitler. There was, you know, Italy and Spain and all that. But it feels like they're satirizing something that is like in the early stages, I guess, which is like something that's really interesting to me about this movie.
Like, they kind of all the costumes kind of are, especially in the war scene, like there's a different, every other shot, Groucho's in a different era of.
That's when it really became Looney Tunes at the end when they go to war.
A lot of the set design too, like it is like it's almost like surreal and stuff. Like it reminded me. I have to imagine this was in. If you guys seen Brazil, like the Terry Gilliam movie, I feel like there's some of that kind of vibes going on. That was something I noted about it. Is like the. Really good Art Deco surreal set design stuff going on. There's some stuff.
I did have a thought. I was just like, damn, like that whole sequence in the beginning, like when they bring him, when they announce him, like giant sets. Like this is an era where like you would have these big ass sets with a ton of extras.
Yeah,
that was kind of impressive to see.
Yeah, it felt like they're using some of like, is this some of the hangover of like the epic silent stuff that they have lying around, you know, like those big scale silent era stuff.
So like there was stuff I appreciated with this movie. Like I kind of,
there was a shot of, this was like, I can't remember where this was. I just have this written down as a note. I don't know if anyone else remembers this. This would have been, I think this is after the tattoo scene. There's a quick shot where someone is dunking a donut into coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that looks so good. I bet that. Yeah, I bet that 1930s donut hits so hard.
Like, I think that, so it's a Groucho, and he's walking into this party, like a garden party, and I think it became funny now after, and maybe this is one of these things, like these guys, these old timers, that these comedy directors, this is probably playing on TV all the time, and just like him walking became funny to me a little bit, like the way he's kind of stomping kind of thing, like he's always just walking, and so like it's like our beloved Tim Robinson, that stuff, those skits just get funnier the more times you watch them, kind of thing. And I think that's how this probably is, you know, a little bit, because it's just like you start catching things like that, like he's always walking like that, and until he walks in, grabs that donut off someone else's plate, dunks it in another person's tea.
There's like a good shot of just like it's like an overhead shot of the donut. It's a very loving shot of the donut being like dunked in that coffee.
I was just looking, this is it didn't make the top 100, it looks like, but it's listed as 221 on the Sight and Sound list.
Well, and this was not a success when it came out too. Like, this was actually considered a failure.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you know like what happened, like when it became like because it's considered, I think it was, we were saying, like the Marx Brothers movie, right?
Well, it was later. It later kind of became known as like this is like the Marx Brothers movie. But when it came out, I guess it was considered a box office failure. Well, as they say, not an outright box office failure, but it was. Oh, it had mixed reviews, and it just wasn't. It was like middling.
Yeah, I do see like some of the thought is that it came out. It just came out during the Great Depression, so it's just not something I think a lot of people wanted to see during the Great Depression, maybe like something that they maybe wanted something that had a little less meat on the bone, or like a little less.
Well,
like,
I don't know. I mean, Gone with the Wind came out in the 30s in the Depression, and that was like the most. I mean, I think still to this day, yeah, it's the most successful movie of all time.
I think Gone with the
Wind, specifically because it came out during the Depression.
I think Gone with the Wind is more escapism though than this would be, because this is dealing with like contemporary politics.
Gone with the Wind in a madcap zany way, though.
Sure, but you're still dealing with like, oh yeah, the rise of Hitler. You know, like that's what it's about. Where Gone with the Wind is like that happened a long time ago. You know, you could,
I suppose. Yeah, and also that is like an epic.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine being like someone in 1933, like you're trying to escape the thoughts of the bleak depression. Like, oh, do you want to go see a comedy about the rise of Hitler? That's going to be the next problem on the horizon.
Maybe by this point, people were getting tired of the Marx Brothers stick. I don't know.
Yeah,
could be. Yeah. It's funny because it looks like that there was a Laurel and Hardy movie called Duck Soup in 1927. So this is just,
oh, really?
That was silent.
Look, so, people are done with Duck Soup. Laurel and Hardy.
Duck Soup's over.
Duck
it's
soup
chicken
so
noodle now.
Weird. I've never seen Laurel and Hardy. That's one. That's,
you know, I'm just gonna potentially say maybe we should watch that in a future soup themed month.
Okay.
Are there other soup movies? What's like a
fried green tomatoes reminds me of soup, but it's not. I don't know.
Do they have soup in My Dinner with Andre?
Oh, maybe, right? It's a good poll.
Do I Google soup movies?
Soup movies. Well, you're gonna get an ad for AARP.
I mean, if
AARP.
We're talking about like the satirization of this movie, like one thing that really stood out to me was how like. With it, like for some reason, people are just all about this dictator, Groucho Marx, and when he says like, "What I'm gonna do?" Like, "Oh, there's gonna be pleasure. It will be reported." And he's talking about how we're gonna shoot people. Like, "Book goes the weasel," and everyone's on board.
I will not stand for anything that's crooked or unfair. I'm strictly on the up and up, so everyone beware. If anyone's caught taking graft. And I don't get my share. We stand them up against the wall, and out goes the weasel.
So everyone beware, it's crooked or unfair. Don't let the state of this affair get to share.
There, yeah, and there's a good line there, too, where he's like, who are you going to believe? Me or your own eyes?
Yeah. It's just like,
they're
pretty blunt about what they're satirizing.
And it's you know... relevant.
Still true to this day.
It's kind of crazy. Like, yeah, like I just looked up like lines and stuff. Cause it is definitely Chris Farley show shit. Just being like, this line was funny, this line was funny.
Which is why we typically don't do comedies all that much.
I know. I was a little nervous. Hands on the wheel. I was nervous about this episode because there's a lot of things working against this as a podcast movie because it's a comedy, which is always tough because what do you do? Just like, that was funny when that happened. Yeah. It's only an hour long, which is like shorter than most of our episodes. And it's so madcap and like passed as a foreign country that like this is one of the most like over my head. I feel like I missed like 90% of this movie, or I could watch it again and pick up on these lines again. But you know, it's a barrage. It's an onslaught.
Yeah, I mean, there's different. I mean, it's really just like setups after setups, and it's weird because some of them just feel at it. The movie is sort of out of its own time because there's like this. There's all these bits with like the, like it looks like popcorn vendors on the street or something. I'm like, what country is this?
That was just like, yeah, that's Harpo and Chico. They're the two spies, and like they just have this thing going on, completely non sequitur, of just dicking around with this like popcorn and lemonade vendor guy. It doesn't seem to have anything else to do with the plot. It just sort of happens.
Maybe that's like a let's all go to the lobby type thing, like juice the movie theater.
Oh, yeah, maybe. So, they're like, yeah, we'll get some popcorn, some
but
lemonade.
This did lead to, if you recall, in February, I said the grossest thing I've seen all year so far was those kids running through the cake with their shoes on.
I do remember.
It has been replaced.
Hmm.
There's a moment, I believe it's Harpo, when Harpo Marx jumps into the guy's lemonade like thing feet first and starts kicking around. That is now the grossest thing I've seen all year.
Wow. That's a big accomplishment.
I saw that and I was just like, that's disgusting.
That's a big achievement for this movie to have like the still 100 years later, the grossest thing you've seen all year.
He gets in with his bare feet and just starts kicking around in that lemonade. And it was particularly an affront to me because I love good lemonade. Like that's the thing. Like if I'm out and about and I see a lemonade vendor or something, I'm like, ooh, nice, good sugary lemonade. I'm going to get that. And to think that there could have been some dipshit comedian's feet just like running around in there. It was revolting, I tells you.
Yeah, that stuff's weird. And the movie to me, I think about halfway point when it sort of just like kind of has sort of a plot thing, it starts working better than that stuff a little bit, in my opinion. But yeah, it's tough. It is a tough one to watch or to talk about, I suppose. I'm kind of looking through like lines that kind of pop out, at least on this list. And it's pretty funny,
it's
even
because
reading.
As you say, like there's not the plot is just so threadbare. Like it's just one comedy setup after another, yeah, of just goofy zaniness. Like the whole mirror thing, that to me that just went on so fucking long. And again, just in a vacuum. In fact, I don't think there was any sound period during that scene when Harpo and Chico Marx dress up as Groucho and try to steal plans for something. I don't even know what. Again, Mike, like
she just says, she keeps talking about, I think it's the war plans or something. It's just
war plans. Yeah. They go in to steal the war plans. They dress up like him in like a nightcap. They put like the makeup on their eyebrows and their upper lip. And there's a moment when they're like running out of the house. They run into this big giant mirror. It crashes. It breaks. You don't know where the glass goes. That was one question I had. Like the glass is just gone from the floor. And then Groucho runs behind them. And it's this moment where he pretends to be like the mirror.
Yeah.
And it goes on for so long. Just them like, oh, just pretend to be.
That's a classic bit. I don't know.
It gets a little funny when like he does a thing with like the hat. And at a certain point, he like hands the hat to the other and they like exchange hats.
Yeah, like, or he like drops the hat and he grabs it for him and gives it back to him.
That was the funniest part of the bit when he drops it and he gives it back to him, the hat. That was funny. Like that was like classic Looney Tunes.
I was thinking of the end of Annihilation.
Or that, but it just, I think again, like it just seems so awkward because there is literally no sound. Like there's just no sound of any kind. And it just,
everyone's laughing. The whole audience, that's
Ryan,
all you can hear.
You had the best experience watching this with a crowd in a theater, like in an old vaudeville theater, to literally be a vaudeville theater.
They would have played this.
Didn't you use the time machine in Bartertown to watch this in a 1930s cinema?
Yeah, it was filled with smoke. It was great. Classic, you know?
Yeah. And I keep telling you, that's why you keep blowing your paychecks on these time machine adventures.
Look, guys got to live, you know. This is a bleak time we live in.
How many times have you gone back to opening weekend 1977, May 5th, Ryan?
only a couple, you know, when I'm, you know, feeling really down, you know, that even that, like, a Star Wars movie can bring me up, you know, it's tough days.
In Dolby?
In stereo, yeah.
Whoa.
2.1.
Yeah. 2.1.
The satire, I think there's stuff that's pretty, it's still pretty cutting.
I mean, I wrote the lyrics for, like, they're, like, unhinged.
Oh,
like,
that stuff, the songs, when they start singing in the beginning, at first when I watched, it's like, oh, no, are they singing this? But I'm glad it's just, like, a spoof in the beginning.
Well, the song at the end, I think is like, one of the best parts. Like, yeah. I wrote down some of the lyrics, is like, because they're all just, like, it's, like, a very happy, like, we're going to war. And there's, like, a line in there. Like, they're all, like, happy to go to war, and they're all so stoked they're going to, like, die. And there's, like, a line, it's like, they got good. Guns, we got guns. All God's children got guns.
They got guns, we got guns. All God's children got guns. We're gonna walk all over the devil here. All God's children got guns.
L-C-W, a W crime for me. As I'm coming round the mountain, we'll avenge you on my knee. L-P-W, O-W, cry with me. As I'm coming round the mountain, we'll
avenge you
on my
knee. This felt very Mel Brooks to me.
Yeah. Yes, exactly, 100%. Like, hail Fredonia, don't cry for me. Like, it's all just like, I'm so happy to die. They're gonna die. We're gonna die. We're all gonna die. Like,
yeah, there's a line here where Groucho goes, "You're a brave man. Go and break through the lines. And remember, while you're out there risking your life, limb through shot and shell, we'll be in here thinking about what a sucker you are." You know, kind of.
this was kind of the moment when they go to war. You get this war song, and then you get the campiness with, like. To me, like, this is the moment when an edible would kick in, and the movie gets increasingly zany. Like you mentioned, there's the point where they're at war, they're getting bombed, and, like, he goes into one room, he comes out wearing a different, like, old-timey war outfit, and it keeps changing. That is, like, a moment when I feel like if you had an edible, that's when this movie probably really
multiple
cooks.
Times, like, a missile flies through the window, and it, like, goes across the room, like a cartoon missile, like, flying, and then at one point he just pulls the shade down so it doesn't happen again. And then, like, there's a part where, like, a missile, like, an explosion happens behind them, and he says, "Quiet back there," kind of thing. It's like, that shit's, I don't know, there's a part where he grabs a gun and he throws his gun. He's like, "Ah, shit, my gun," or something. He says, like,
yeah, he, like, throws it instead of shoots it. Yeah.
And then, like, remember, you're fighting in this woman's honor, which is probably more than she ever did, you know? So it's just, like, stuff, like, there's a lot of stuff about the women, this particular woman, for sure, you know.
Yeah, Groucho does have a little bit of, like, incel vibes, I gotta say.
Well, this is again different time. Like, he keeps knocking on her for being quote unquote fat. Not at all, by the way. That's a crazy standard.
No, he says, "I could dance with you until the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows till you come home." You know?
So he does a whole routine about how ugly the lady, like how big she is. Yeah.
Oh, you got your own zip code or something like that.
Yeah,
you got your own office building.
Wow.
There's a whole, basically, married. I can see her right now in the kitchen, bending over the hot stove, but I can't see the stove.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that line.
So, I don't know. It's like, it's tough. It's all, it's nonstop with this guy. Yeah. And I don't know. Like, the physical stuff started getting
And he breaks the fourth wall,
Do you think he, as they say, pulled? In the day? Do you think Groucho pulled in the day?
I mean, he seems pretty, I don't know, on top.
You think they were just lined up after the vaudeville act?
I think all of them. Like, if you just look at pictures of them, you're like, oh, those are all pretty good-looking men, you know?
What about Zeppo? Do you think anyone's going for Zeppo?
Yeah, there has to be, really. He looks like the kind of the straight-laced one, but I don't know. I don't know his deal. That's one thing, and Double
He's
Threat
barely
podcast.
In the movie.
They're like, what's Zeppo's deal? I think there's, like, a shirt that they made, because it's like,
is it just like, well, let's give him a job? Like, he's not good at this, but, like, well, is it like Tom Hanks's brother who does like the voice of Tom Hanks in all the video game adaptations of Toy Story. Like,
excuse me, question from Zeppo. You've been referred to as the pretty one.
Well, he says that he was in their first five movies, and then he was performed the subdued style compared to his brothers, like the romantic lead usually.
So is he essentially the straight man?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I guess they needed one.
Yeah.
He's not really playing like the straight man in this movie. There's not a lot of like Groucho playing
sort
of off.
Groucho
of him.
Is sort of the straight man. I don't know. I don't know. It's weird.
Something I didn't expect about the Marx Brothers is I did not expect Groucho to be like the main one. I thought Groucho was like I thought it would be the other ones, and Groucho would be like the wild guy who's like kind of, you know, used sparingly, but you know, I didn't think it was the Groucho show.
What did you ever watch any like Three Stooges stuff growing up or anything like that?
I enjoyed Three Stooges.
No.
Never, Mike?
I'm sure I saw it, but it was never something I liked it or sought out or really.
Well, I guess I don't think I've sought it out, but it'd be on like AMC like late at night or early in the morning or something.
I'm sure, you know, there was some that played, but it was never really something I watched.
Because I like that.
I enjoy Three Stooges. Like, I'd be curious. Like, I've seen Abbott and Costello meet like Frankenstein, I think. And like,
they meet
that's
Dracula.
Like,
they
meet
Frankenstein.
Classic straight man, comedy man.
I mean, this, like, Three Stooges is more like slapstick physical comedy than this is, right? That would be the big difference.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, I mean, here's a good comparison. So, like, I remember we'd watch Simpsons pretty young. And then, and that slapstick stuff was the stuff that hit, you know, like the, and then now watching it, it's the lines of dialogue and the signs are like the funniest stuff. And it's, I think, a similar vibe probably between Stooges and these guys.
Definitely that like sense of like, there's so many jokes coming at you. You're not going to like, you're not going to take it all in one sitting.
Yeah. But I don't know. I guess I was taken by like, that one lady that it was just like Goo Goo Gaga. What the, like, or, you know, whatever. It was just like a Ooga.
The singer or whatever.
Yeah.
The dancer.
She was walking around with like, just like a cloth basically. It's like,
yeah, that was one of the big things about this movie that struck me was the fact that it's a pre-code movie and just like, yeah, you can. Yeah.
It's great. There's a lot of girls. There's a lot of women like walking around in their underwear and like, oh, I thought you weren't going to be in here, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a bit with the Harpo in the bathtub at one point with the guy. I think that's the vendor, right?
That's the vendor. They keep running into each other. Yeah.
Poor guy. Yeah.
It's like a Nightmare on Elm Street bit where like he's fully submerged in this like tub. You know what I mean? Like Harpo is. The guy gets in the tub and somehow Harpo comes out like, you know, as if he's in like a pool. It's a bathtub, but you can tell the gag, like, you know, where the camera's like, you can't see, like, he's whatever. It was like a Nightmare on Elm Street gag almost. Well, there's like a full guy in there with him. Anyway, I don't know.
Some interesting stuff about the NRA. So this is the National Recovery Administration, and it was FDR. The goal was to, so it's put out during the Great Depression, right? The goal was to get rid of, quote, cutthroat competition by bringing industry, labor, and government together to create codes of fair practices and set prices. So basically allowed industries to get together and write codes of fair competition intended to help workers set minimum wages and maximum hours, as well as minimum prices at which products could be sold. And famously, the Supreme Court during FDR was very conservative. Like, that's why like FDR talked about packing the court, because like he kept putting laws that would get struck down. And that's what happened with this. The Supreme Court struck it down as unconstitutional a couple years after this movie was made, and it went away.
Okay.
That's, well, too bad.
I mean, like, as we said, hard to talk about a comedy without going into the Chris Farley show. Thankfully, this movie didn't really make me laugh, so there's not much to talk about. But no, I looking at it like academically, like you said, this is a straight line to a lot of like famous like comedy people that I do like.
Yeah, what about like Harpo pulling out the blowtorch? That's funny.
That was funny. Yeah, and it was a real blowtorch. He full on pulled
and
out a blowtorch.
The sound that makes, I don't know, something about that's funny.
That was nice. Yeah, there are bits here. I can see the DNA, but it's just like, as I think Mike summed it up perfectly, like, this is from a different time. How'd you say it?
Well, it's not my saying, but just the saying, the past is a foreign country.
Yeah. Yeah, it was hard for me to wrap my head around, and maybe you're right, Ryan. Maybe if I saw this with the crowd and I was able to kind of, because as you said, the jokes are often a mile, like, you know, every second. So, you know, maybe I could pick up on some things.
I forget if you mentioned this, Ryan, but like, was the crowd going with it? Was it?
It was one of those things like that. I didn't know what to expect, and I think like it was a mixture of probably people have seen this before, and I think like a lot of young people too, and. Like, I don't think it was this movie. I forgot when it was, but I remember walking out of that theater.
Like A Night at the Opera, maybe?
No, I hadn't seen that one, actually. But I'm saying, like, it was this I saw. But I'm saying that, God, I remember walking out of that theater, seeing something old like this, and someone saying, like hearing a kid say, I want to watch more old movies. And so, like, I think that having that context of the people that, like, are stoked to watch this in theaters really helps, kind of thing, you know? Mm. And there's not
juices
a lot of...
it up a little bit.
Yeah, and there's, like... there's barely, it's a surprise that there's like, I think there was one like unfortunate like race joke in the movie,
There's a very racist line.
Yeah, I'm surprised, I mean, I guess other than like the sexist stuff, but like, it's not very like.
It's not, like, you're surprised there's not more of that?
There's like, surprise, there's more of that like crap that's like in like 90s, like late 90s comedies that like sucks, you know, kind of thing. Compared to this, like, you're surprised, I think.
It was more like maybe the 90s, some of the comedy was, like, being a little edgelordy. Like, maybe that's, like, I think that's why, like.
Like, this is pretty, like, surprisingly, even if it does fall flat for you, but it is pretty timeless stuff. And that's why, like, the Looney Tunes stuff worked even when we were watching it when it was 80 years old.
I think it would have worked for you, Dave, and better for me just seeing it in the theater.
In a crowd. Yeah, with the crowd. I agree.
Yeah, but I think watching it, it was nice to watch it again and kind of like, I felt the same way probably for the first half. And it was really like when the more physical stuff started happening, I was able to kind of get on board. Like the tattoo scene is like pretty early on. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm starting to understand who these characters are a little bit. Helped a little bit. Having a little bit, it's almost like you need a tiny bit of context before getting into it.
I chuckled a few times, but otherwise I was pretty, honestly, it was that scene from I felt bad because it's like the Marx Brothers are known as, they are like pillars, we talk about the Mount Rushmore all the time, like they would probably be in the Mount Rushmore of comedy, the Marx Brothers, like they are a known thing, but I felt kind of bad. I felt like that scene from Freaks and Geeks when what's his face takes his girlfriend to see The Jerk and he's laughing, he's loving it, the crowd's loving it, and the camera pans over to his date and she is just like,
that's me and Ryan.
Stoned
face. That's me sitting there next to Ryan, not enjoying the comedy stylings of Steve Martin.
When I was just like,
I've actually never seen The Jerk. I would see it with an open mind. I'm willing to acknowledge
good.
Steve.
I
mean, Martin.
Well, hopefully, watch it with Ryan.
I think the thing is, I grew up in the thing with Steve Martin. Ryan is like, I know you grew up the same time, but like, I grew up in the 90s and 2000s, so I just knew Steve Martin is like in these awful like 90s and 2000s
that's the
movies.
Pink Panther.
The Pink Panther, or Cheaper by the Dozen, or
Cheaper by a Dozen guy.
His role in Looney Tunes Back in Action, which could be described as disastrous.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you can catch The Jerk in like a theater, you'll probably go crazy because it's like wild, that movie. And that, let me think. I wonder if that would, how that would play for people, that movie. I don't know. It's pretty funny.
Well, if it's showing at Bartertown, I'll see if I can see it.
It's got, I would say it's got maybe one of the funniest bits where he's like, all I need is this. All I need is this. I don't want to spoil it because Mike hasn't seen it and it is a funny scene. But Ryan, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Like, I could use that.
Sounds hilarious.
I think the first line is pretty funny. It's, I was born a poor black child. It's pretty funny for Steve Martin to say that. I don't know.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And then there's the cans bit.
Yeah, that's the funniest thing, probably, in movies. it's this type of shit, you know? It's from this movie. It's like that kind of, you know, it's exactly this stuff. There's a guy shooting at him. And he's like, he keeps running by cans, and the cans keep getting hit instead of Steve. And he's like, he hates these cans. Stay away from the cans is something you can hear from this movie, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's more sound effects and it has more editing. So maybe that's why you think it's funny.
It's more flashy, I guess. And yeah, again, it felt stale to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's literally just guys in front of a
kid. Did it feel old to you, Dave?
I hate to say it to sound like one of those kids. This is an old movie, but like
it's like 100 years old. I think it's okay to say it. It's old. It feels old. It's old.
It's old. And
it didn't remind you of like Clerks at all. It's just like the camera steady and it's black Clerks. And white.
Just no, like Clerks. I haven't gone back. I haven't revisited Clerks in a long time, but I think just like. I don't know what it was. Again, it's just like it was almost like there was literally no sound. In times, and it, I don't know. It just seemed very.
It's just their audio, yeah. Their
the audio was like kind of like ruining it a little bit for me.
Interesting,
but anyway. But so I don't know. I can't honestly recommend it because I didn't
release
really
the slide whistle cut for Dave.
What's up, Ryan?
Release the slide whistle cut for Dave. More sound effects.
Yeah, maybe. I can't honestly recommend it because I feel bad, but I can't recommend it because it was a comedy that did not really make me laugh. I can appreciate its historical context, but it's not a recommendation.
I think I would recommend it if you can see it, and I didn't see it in a theater, but I feel like I would recommend it for a theater experience.
That seems the most ideal way. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm probably similar. But I don't know, like I like connecting the dots to stuff like I love that kind of thing. Like it's money working backwards. Like that's how I forgot who said it one time, but like in film school, they shouldn't start at the beginning. You got to start at your most contemporary with kids and then go backwards. And to me, that's the best way to kind of like do this kind of thing sometimes. And it ends up keep making things funnier and just like how people made, at least how people made things and how people gathered information and stuff is, I don't know. I like it. I think it's, and yeah, I don't know. And you can't beat an hour movie. You know, I don't know. I think it's great.
You can't argue with the runtime, hour and 7 minutes with credits.
I think, I mean, yeah, there's, I don't think there even is credits really. It's just like the end. Beginning.
It's like the players.
Yeah.
Beginning where you have all their faces on the ducks kind of thing. But I don't know. I think I would. I think especially for like people that are just interested in comedy and like are rooting for it, you know, in a way. Like hope, you know, you're hoping for that good episode of SNL every week, you know, just like maybe it's going to happen this week. Maybe it'll happen. You know, it's like, oh, not this one. Nope, not going to happen. But.
Ryan, every at the end of every SNL episode, Ryan's like tearing up like some tickets, like, oh man, damn it, another loser.
Groucho would have killed hosting SNL.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny seeing that because I know I think I watched one time an interview with Groucho on what's his name's
Dick Cavett.
Dick Cavett kind of thing. You're like, whoa, that's Groucho. He's like, that's an old guy, and you're not used to. I don't think he even has a mustache or anything on. But it's just like
that blew me away. I didn't realize it was like a fake marker.
I know.
Mustache.
Yeah, it's probably. I imagine it's like a Charlie Chaplin thing where he just looks nothing like the tramp. You know,
like
I guess Charlie Chaplin was like a very handsome man.
He does have glasses and a mustache on in this old Dick Cavett from like the 60s and 70s. But I think what I saw one time was like a really old one when he was old. But he was making people laugh. I don't know. I bet you if you caught this on like it probably was on late night TV, you know, as a kid in the 70s and 80s, you know.
Yeah.
It'd have been funny.
I bet if we all lived in the Great Depression, we'd be Marx Brothers fans probably.
Well, yeah. This is our last March movie, March of the Penguins and other bird related films. We might as well do kind of a sum up here. I think it's no contest. Birdcage is the best movie of the month that we watched, bar none.
I mean, are we talking best movie or like just best bird representation?
Bird movie? I mean, I guess if we're doing bird movie, I suppose I got to give it to March of the Penguins.
No love for Boy and the Heron, huh?
That just seems so separate. You know what I mean? That's like its own entity. That was like we fell
Much
into
like
a black
bird,
hole.
Dave, a mysterious flying creature.
It wasn't even a bird. It was a whole sham. It was this creepo inside a heron.
There were lots of other birds in the movie. There was the whole parakeet civilization.
Yeah, remember the what are they? They're pelicans, like they attack them on the beach or whatever, you know?
Yeah, there were a lot of birds. I think that March of the Penguins is probably the best representation of birds, though. I mean,
objectively, yes.
I'm going with Boy and the Heron for that. You know?
Oh, wow. We're all over the place. Okay, that's great. I like it.
I mean, Boy and the Heron is, I think, my favorite movie that we saw.
I'm going to rank them. I'm going Boy and the Heron, this, March of the Penguins, Birdcage.
Wow.
It's, you know, it's hard because these are all very different movies.
No, they're easy to rank. If I were to rank them, I would go Boy and the Heron number one, Birdcage number two, March of the Penguins number three, Duck Suit number four.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm just going off of enjoyment, so I'm going to say Birdcage. This gets tough for me. What did I enjoy more, March of the Penguins or Boy and the Heron? I'm going to say March of the Penguins, Boy and the Heron, and Duck Soup.
Wow. I like Duck Soup more than I expected the second time.
Hell yeah.
Well, I'm glad someone did.
I don't know. It's funny. And it makes me want to watch some more. I got to watch Night at the Opera is the other big one. It did.
But this was, you know, honestly, if this is kind of the end of our nature programming here, this was very informative. We had a very good slew of movies. We had March of the Penguins. We got legit informative stuff. We got, for me, a Pile of Shame movie, Birdcage. I had never seen it before, and it's like a new favorite.
You would think
now
that's more
me.
A Pile of Shame than this, than Duck Soup?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Again, Marx Brothers is just not my thing. I found
Boy and the Heron.
This is a movie that this is historical. This is a historic.
It is,
movie.
And I recognize that. Yeah. But I'm just talking my personal enjoyment.
Okay.
I guess it is a Pile of Shame movie in the sense that like I had never seen a Marx Brothers anything.
Yeah.
So it was nice to finally be able to see it and just to get an idea.
Yeah, just get an idea, so you know, or like you know.
It's a Pile of Shame movie I didn't really care for. I'll say
yeah,
that.
That's true. That happens.
It can happen sometimes. And then Boy and the Heron is just an acid trip that, as we said on that episode, it'll be fun to revisit every like 5 or 10 years and see new things in it. And how you come to it is different.
So what are we doing for April, Dave?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Mike, because I hope you have your security clearance, because we are going to be boarding Air Force One when we return. For April.
Oh my god.
So I trust you will not be bringing any automatic weapons on board. You have your security clearance. You've been vetted by the Secret Service.
We'll see if my bottle of water is small enough to bring on the flight.
Well, no, this is 1997, so bring your bottle of water, bring your box cutter.
I'll bring my nunchucks.
Bring in your AK-47, it's fine.
I'll bring my tasers. I'll bring my AK-47.
The gas, you know, it's all good.
The grenades.
When we return, we'll be flying high in April on Air Force One. In the meantime, get out of my soup.
Rufus, what are you thinking of?
Oh, I was just thinking of all the years I've wasted collecting stamps. I suppose you'll think me a sentimental old fluff, but would you mind giving me a lock of your hair?
A lock of my hair? Why, I had no idea.
I'm letting you off easy. I was going to ask for the whole wig.